Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to another wonderful episode of Soft Rep Radio. I am the host with the most. My name is Rad, and I have a wonderful guest today. But first, before I introduce you to this former Marine, I want to tell you about our merch store, all right? So we got a merch store. You guys have been purchasing stuff out of there, you know, like the cool flashlights, the shirts, all the sweats, the beanies. I think there's a hatchet with our name on it. Please keep going with that because it keeps me doing this and bringing cool entertainment and value to you while you listen. The other thing is to make you smarter, it's reading books. And we have the SoftRep Book Club, and it's softrep.com/book-club. That's right, book-club. Live it, learn it, love it, book-club. Go check it out, get in the book club, and you might just find my next guest, author, Mile Lugosi, Whistles from the Graveyard, right here. And let's welcome him to SoftRep. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, we were talking just before show, confirming Marine Corps, and telling me a little bit about, you know, this young Miles who's like sixth grade. What's going on in your head in sixth grade, man?
Sixth grade.
Take me through it. Yeah.
What was that? That's when 9/11 happened, actually. I was in sixth grade. Yeah. And I remember, but what do you mean, like, specifically?
What were you doing in life, bro? What was your goals? Because it probably was not to be an author, Miles Lugosi, was it? What's going on in seventh grade, dude? Like, were you struggling in school? Because the people that are going to listen to this, the guys like you, the kids that are 15, what were you up to, man? What made you this badass today that we're going to talk about?
Okay, well, I wasn't 15 in sixth grade. That would have been freshman year. But I think I didn't get it into my head that I wanted to go to war until I was about 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just really, it had to do with like a feeling of emptiness, you know, a kind of aimlessness. I knew I didn't want to go to college like everybody else. I wanted to film the war, and I saw Full Metal Jacket about 30 times. And I saw that, you know, you could, the main character was essentially what my job was. I saw that you could just join the Marines and they'll give you a camera and send you to war.
So. Stars and Stripes, huh? You wanted to be in Stars and Stripes. Is that right?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
You gotta make it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the reason why I want to ask that is because, you know, I like to get into know ya. I've never really met ya, and I'm just trying to, you know, we want to talk about Whistles from the Graveyard, of course, which is the book that took you to where we're at today, but going through Afghanistan and combat and everything that you had to deal with. But, you know, at 15, sixth grade, 15, junior high, you know, high schooler, starting to get your learner's permit. And you're like, there's a sense of emptiness, but there's something had to happen between sixth grade and that to have emptiness, right? There had to be like, do you have a good structure at home? Mom and dad were there for you?
Yeah, good structure at home. I just felt like I was kind of like a Holden Caulfield type, you know, catch on the rise, sort of just everyone thought everyone was phony. Everything was fake. There wasn't really, and I don't think there still is really a way for young boys, especially, to test themselves. And basically, this whole, you know, the main reason I joined, it wasn't really out of like patriotism or desire to serve or anything like that. I mean, for a lot of guys, that's the case. But I think the main issue is that the main impetus for people to join is to get the shit kicked out of them and to get tested, basically.
And when you turned 17, 18, and did the recruiter come to you at your high school, or did you go to them and say, you know, I want to be the blade on the tip of the spear of the military and become a Marine, right?
Yeah, so I knew I was going to join. I went to a high school in Manhattan that had 5,000 kids in a building that looked like a prison, basically, you know, caged windows, and I was like one of two white kids in my high school, and of course the recruiters like to target minority kids and whatnot, and I go over there and he's like, how come the only white boy in this school is the one signing up? So anyway, yeah, that was it. And then like as soon as I graduated high school, they put me on a bus, and I ended up in Parris Island.
Parris Island, because you're east of the Mississippi, so you would go to Parris Island for your recruitment. And you know, they call you a boot there, a recruit. Is that what happens when you get there, or they call you they know how to say your last name correctly?
They call you all kinds of things, mostly bitch, mostly you know, your mouth is the cum dumpster open, you know, everything.
It's just coming at you.
Everything takes on a new term, you know. At first you kind of think like it's us against the drill instructors, right? You know, like if we stick together, we can kind of make it through together. And within about a week, I'd say, everyone was against each other and had developed an extreme form of Stockholm syndrome, you know, where we were kind of like in love with our drill instructors and couldn't stand each other. You know what I mean? That's how Stockholm syndrome works, you know. So that's basically what how boot camp functions. Basically, is a form of brainwashing, but also mass punishment, right? So if one person fucks up, just like in Full Metal Jacket, one person fucks up, everyone else gets punished, and that person has to watch, basically, right? And so they develop a fear in you of letting down the tribe, you know, letting down the group, you know, and that's kind of how the whole system functions. That's how it's been functioning since probably the dawn of war. I don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Sticks and stones stick together. Two people. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's there is always like that camaraderie that is instilled, but I get what you're saying, where all of a sudden there's this term called drill privates, or, you know, like they're not the drill instructor. They're just like they now want to be. They see the drill instructor and they're like, why didn't I choose that job? The power job, the job over me right now. You know, and they're like, I want to be that guy. I want to walk in and be like, say hello in 50 different ways, but mean 50 different things.
I mean, I think you'd have to be insane to be a drill instructor. Those guys, you have to go through. There's boot camp, right? But then if you want to be a drill instructor, you have to go through like another form of boot camp to become a
perfect
drill instructor.
Boot camp.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah,
boot
yeah.
camp.
And those guys are nuts. I mean, it's all a performance, but goddamn, some of them could really act. You know, I actually thought they wanted to kill us sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all a performance, you know.
Did you get your name read out just like in Full Metal Jacket? They're like, Snowball, 0311, Infantry.
Well, yeah,
Lugosi.
They called me. They called me a word I can't say on the air. But yeah, if you read the book,
yeah,
you'll see.
It's in the book, and we won't give you spoilers. Yeah, this book doesn't hold back, dude. You didn't really hold back. You just said what you felt and how it was. You know, I got to the point to where you went over and sat next to a dude sitting with his rifle, like he was praying to the. And you're just like, I don't even want to know this guy.
I just didn't expect him to give us rifles on the first day. I was like, because I grew up in the city. I never shot guns or anything. And I'm being handed an M16 at like 5 or 6 in the morning, just at, you know, just after getting off, you know, the bus. It was like, holy shit, man. No joke.
Like, no joke. They're just like, this is what you're here for. This is what you're here for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then you go through basic. You get assigned to photography. You got to stick with that. Is that correct?
That is correct. I thought I had a 2-year contract, but turns out that doesn't exist. So
no,
I end up with
4.
I end up with 5 with extra year tacked on because they because of the camera school.
Okay.
And basically, it's just like a crash course. It's actually on it's on Fort Meade, the school, which is where the NSA is. I think Snowden was there while I was there. And yeah, basically, it's just like a crash course in propaganda, like how to sort of put together a video package that was showing, like, our whole mission at, when was it, 2008, when Obama's troop surge started, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The whole mission of Combat Camera was to show that we were transitioning out, and we were going to give, like, they wanted a lot of imagery of the Afghan National Army, the soldiers that we were working with, you know?
And yeah.
So our job was to kind of show that these guys could take over after we left. And we all saw how that went. That didn't go too well.
Oh, yeah, in Iraq, right?
Afghanistan.
Oh, Afghanistan. Yeah, yeah. Because, like, you were kind of, Iraq was going on as well at the same time, because we didn't pull out of there until 2009. So I'm not trying to get confused on your theater of operations, but you were surging up in Afghanistan while they were withdrawing in Iraq.
Yeah, Iraq was kind of dwindling down. I mean, we had, the whole country was in a civil war, which we started, basically, right? We went.
Yeah, we vacuumed it. Yeah,
we fucked it up, and we're kind of like,
that's politicians for you, though, bro.
Yeah, but you know, the soldiers have to take credit too. You know, it's a volunteer army. It's not like we were drafted or anything, right?
Right.
And
that is true.
Everyday citizens are complicit too, because their tax money goes to fund these wars. Now, I've often kind of toyed with the idea of, if there was a draft, like if there was, like, if we were like Russia or another country, Korea, where you have to have mandatory service for 2 years or whatever, I wonder if that might actually prevent us from having more, you know, getting in more involved in these wars, right? Because everybody's kid would be on the chopping block, right?
Yeah.
And every politician's kid would have to go serve and all that. And at the same time, I think it might even, you know, how divided the country is, you know, by bringing in, like, you know, liberal kids and right wing kids.
And let flat feet people serve. Don't give them an out, you know, make sure that people with flat feet don't get to use it as an excuse or spurs, you know, like, make sure that those people aren't pussing out and just, you know, calling their daddies with all their money and just getting out of conscription. You know what I'm saying? Because why does one get the other, you know, labels, right? Labels, whether they're liberal or they're conservative or they're, you know, white
or
black.
Well, I'm just saying it would put it military does, it introduces you to a whole bunch of kids that you would never, you know, interact with or see.
That's right.
And I think there's just such a divide right now because we're in our bubbles and all that. If we're, you know, if there was like a mandatory service, and I'm not advocating for them. I'm just kind of toying with the idea.
Sure.
It might actually, you'd have kids with, you know, Southern kids, Northern kids all together, kind of seeing that they're not really that all that different. You know, it's just politics. And that, you know, we're all human beings, basically.
Exactly. I mean, that is true. We are. We are all, like, human beings.
Political beliefs aside, you know, we're still, you know, we're still the same in a lot of ways, I guess.
Still neighbors. Yeah. We're still, you know, we still sit down to go to the bathroom or stand up or whatever, the same one leg on a time exactly. with your pants if you got legs. But everybody's got something to say about some analogy. What about us? We don't have legs. Well, you put your shirt on one arm at a time. Oh, you don't got no arms or legs? Are you the Metallica video of one come to life or what, bro? Huh?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course. The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
So you joined in like 2007?
2008, is that right? 2008?
Yeah, so that's when you were 18, because you were mentioning 9/11 was when you were in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And so your combat photography courses, I'm really interested in the f-stop life that you learned there. And do you use autofocus or are you a manual guy today?
Today, no, I wouldn't use autofocus. But when I was in Afghanistan, I did.
Yeah.
Just because when you're getting shot at, it's kind of, you don't want to be like.
It's like, hold the button. Yeah, I got you.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I even had, what's it called? I think I had the auto light on too. So like if I were going into, you know, if we were outside and then we would go into someone's mud hut or house, auto exposure would come on. I was not like the best cameraman, I'd say. But. I knew what to film. You know, it's not really like the camera work can come out of the scare is not great. It's very shaky. You can tell I'm like 19 years old. But it's the kind of access that I had to these kids, you know, that like a civilian journalist wouldn't have. You know?
Right.
And
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You're taking photos of things that go back to be looked at and put into dossiers. You know, and so I would imagine, no?
I mean, there's, well.
I mean, you can't just post everything, you know? You
No. I was not secretly, but I had my, you know, I had my job, which was to make bullshit, which was to perpetuate the lie that the war was working and we were going to win and the Afghan army was going to, you know, defeat the Taliban once we left. And then I would film guys smoking hashish and opium while getting shot at, you know. So it was like that dichotomy. But obviously, the hashish would not go to my. I would not send that to my superiors.
Sure. Can I ask you what kind of camera that you were running? Do you want to say the brand? Was it a Canon?
I can't actually, for legal purposes.
Oh, say, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's because cool. I've just always heard that you take a Canon to battle.
Yeah, right.
Jokingly, Nikon. That's cool. I'll say their names. You know, we'll give them all out there. We'll give them their whole Pentax. What's up?
the whole reason, you know, the Marine Corps was trying to sue me, their whole basis, because I had none of the footage was classified, but their whole argument was, what camera were you using? Was it our camera? Like that, that was like a proprietary legal argument that they had.
I got you.
It wasn't that the footage was classified. It was the footage belongs in the public domain, right? If you're filming for the government, as long as it's not classified. Yeah,
true.
So their whole argument was, I was interrogated by NCIS and they were like, so which camera were you using? Whose camera were you using? You know, because if they were saying, if you were using our government equipment, then technically it belongs to us.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's like saying your eyeballs in your brain because you're government equipment.
Yep.
So like, you know, I don't know about that. You know, I get it. They might have offered you a soda pop to get your fingerprints in that interrogation room. You want a Mountain Dew? Yeah, it's the right.
You literally are government property.
So, correct, because I was joking with my dad, right? Yeah. We were at the VA one time, and he was wearing his – he was in checked in for the hospital for getting some surgery, and it said property of the U.S. government with a barcode. And I said, Dad, I thought you retired, you know? I thought you said you retired. He's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, look, and I pull his shirt back. It says property, U.S. government, and he looks at me like, what do you do?
Yeah, I love going to the, I love seeing the old timers at the VA. You know, they're pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, that's us soon. Well, the young timers need to go to the VA, because otherwise they're going to be the old timers and they won't have the energy to go to the VA. Mm-hmm. And then they'll be like, you know, their wives will be pushing them in the wheelchairs with mm-hmm. no energy. And these young timers have all of the care to go there. And they have the ability right now while they're in a younger age to go get their ailments and whatnot looked at. And I'm a big proponent to go get yourself taken care of, you know, whether you're going to get a colonoscopy at 40, 45 years old, or you've got some issues going on and you think you're too young, or it's not affecting you to go to, you don't want to go to the VA because it's old timers. You know what I mean? It's, there's a real thing. It's like, go get yourself taken care of if you need it.
Yeah. But it is funny to like see the difference. That, you know, the Vietnam generation guys that are now, like you said, getting wheeled around.
Yeah.
You know, getting into arguments with the police, because there's a heavy police presence at the VAs, you know, because we're all fucking nuts. And,
yeah.
They have some kind of protection against the doctors and whatnot. It's just interesting to see that generational divide, you know, and is that what I have to look forward to? Thing, you know,
it's true. I was listening to the nurses station, just kind of over listening to the nurses, and they are calling them all these different code names. And I was like, what are you guys saying over here? My dad was in the room and I was like, what's the WWs? She's like, oh, those are our World War II vets. Yeah. And then we have the Viets. And so they call them WWs, the Viets, and all these different categories of who's in right now. And I just looked at her like, oh, you guys just are filing them away as WWs and Viets and, you know, Afghani and, like, you know, or whatever the case is, Iraq, you know, the war zone of the theater that these guys have gone through. And it just kind of sat with me like, geez, you know, as you hear there's no more WWs left, you start thinking that there's not going to be Viets. And then it just keeps on going down that line, you know, because when I was going to the VA at a younger age, it was the World War II guys and the Koreans that were starting to get wheeled around, you know, when my dad was starting to go in the early 90s. And so, to see that, I agree. You know, I've sat at the smoking shack. I've heard the stories from five different sailors tell this story five times about Kraken that they all killed at five different locations.
Yeah. Everybody's got a war story. Even the guys.
Yeah, right.
Even some of the guys who never went to war.
That's what I'm saying. That Kraken's been killed five times by five different guys at five different locations, you know?
Yeah.
One time the Kraken came and got me, you see? And the other guy's like, but what about the time it got me?
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Now, you're getting NCIS coming at you, you know, you got the Marines, you know, everybody's saying, hey, you, stop. Stop what? Why are they, what's up, man? Like, what's your first thoughts when they're like, why are they coming at you?
My first thought was, oh, shit, I need a lawyer. And then it took me a really, really long time to find a lawyer who, because it was such a, it was unprecedented. No one had ever made a film with, like, government footage, right? No, no one had ever really done that. The only other instance was at, I think, was the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, which was photographed by a combat camp. So that was a soldier who...
Yeah, where the general shot the dude in the street, right?
No, not that one. The massacre in My Lai, they basically killed, I think, 300 women and, you know, and children. And,
oh, I see.
And
okay.
There were the photographs that were taken were by combat, like a soldier, you know, whose job was to film. Mm. And so there was the whole thing with that was, you know, who was footing. Can we release these photos? Well, they're government property and blah, blah, blah. But it's not classified. It's a war crime. And so eventually I was in that same boat where I was talking to military lawyers and they were kind of like scratching their heads and like, yeah, I don't know. This is a gray area. I'm not really sure what to tell you. and it finally, eventually, I was studying at Columbia University, and I found this group called the Knight Institute, and these motherfuckers go hard. I mean, they litigated the release of like CIA black sites in Afghanistan where people were getting tortured, abuses at Guantanamo. And then once I fell in with them and they took me on pro bono, I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good now. And the Marine Corps basically realized they couldn't bleed me financially, right, by taking me to court. And they would just give more publicity to the film by doing that. So they eventually backed off.
And what's the progress with the film?
What's the progress?
Yeah, I mean, like, where's it at right now? Is it Whistles from the Graveyard based on this book? Because that's new to me. I'm just learning about that from you.
Oh yeah, no. The documentary is called Combat Obscura. It's on
Combat Obscura?
Obscura.
Okay.
Yeah, the book is kind of about the making of that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I was getting into that.
Yeah.
So Combat Obscura, the film that you put together, the documentary... And that's out there to find on platforms?
Everywhere, yeah.
Well, we'll make sure that that's noted on our podcast.
Anyone who's got a, computer with internet.
A what? A computer? What? What's that?
A phone.
That's a word I've
just
never...
Don't watch it on your phone. Please don't watch it on your phone. I hate when people watch movies on their phones.
That's great. Combat Obscura. I'll have to check that out. And we'll put a link in... down below so that our viewers can go ahead and just click on it and check out, the book, the video that you put together, the documentary. I mean, what I'm saying, I guess, what's the progress? Is it a Sundance thing? Is it something that you've submitted to any festivals for, any type of, yeah.
Yeah, we did the whole festival circuit. I played France, Germany, Czech Republic, all over the U.S., obviously. In Germany, the craziest shit happened.
Yeah. What?
So the movie's obviously pretty intense. It's very graphic. There's a lot of blood, a lot of kids getting shot up, and at the end, my buddy Jacob Levy gets shot, and there's this guy in the crowd, in the audience, and he just faints. He just clocks out and on the floor. They shut down the film. The paramedics had to come. and then afterwards, I have to do a Q&A, and I'm like, I was trying to kind of make, like, the guy was fine, right? He just fainted.
Right.
But Germans, I don't know if you've ever been to Germany, they don't really have much of a sense of humor. And so...
I've been to Rammstein, the band. That's about as close to Germany so far.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, they're great. And so I was kind of trying to make light of it, but they were not.
They were not.
They were not having it. Crickets.
Bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah. So it's got that effect on people.
Yeah.
My dad talked about that with like Platoon back in the 80s.
Yeah.
He didn't want to see it. He's like, guys walked out of the theater on it because it was just so much of a.
Well, that's
muddy grind.
Yeah, that's a Hollywood film. We're talking about real footage, and seeing it on the big screen is pretty intense. Like I couldn't, the first time I saw it on the big screen, I kind of, I had to walk out. I couldn't deal with it. It was just too loud.
So you need to mentally prepare yourself to see it. It's just not like
yeah,
that. It's a combat.
It's not a Sunday morning viewing. Oh, there she is.
What's up, Luna?
Yeah, I got two of them.
I green screen my cat into every podcast. She sees I have my pencil. You see, my David Letterman pencil. And so she's like, I want that pencil on my spine.
Oh, she likes that. She likes the pencil.
She likes that whole, interesting. And she likes to, meow.
Yeah, I got two of them myself.
Oh, good. We're going to get along. I think we already are. So where are you based out of right now? Where am I talking to you from?
Oh, a little place called Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah.
So oh, nice. Nice. So yeah, you go skiing a lot and
snowboard all the time. In fact, my snowboards are just right against the wall, just right there waiting for 2-3 weeks from now.
That was the best snowboarding I ever did out there. Yeah. It's crazy you can come boarding into the town. You know, I love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can ski in and out of it.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah. You should come out anytime and hit me up. We'll go ride.
Yeah, man. Just, you know, buy me a flight.
Yeah, I feel you. Some, you know, well, Breeze, let me just give them a shout out, dude. $29 one way from John Wayne to Salt Lake City, Provo. $29.
Which one is John Wayne? Which airport is it?
John Wayne, I think, is Orange County.
Okay.
But if you're talking realistically, it just takes you a minute to get, just get to John Wayne, fly out to Salt Lake City. It takes you $30 one way. It's $60 bucks round trip.
But then you get hit with the pass.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll give you a ride. Oh, yeah, that's true. I might know somebody, though.
Okay.
You just never know. You can do it for cheap if you're me.
You know how to play the system.
If you know how to just, like, you know, use a coupon like the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Whistles from the Graveyard. Like, what do you think is next? Do you think you're going to write another book? Are you going to have anything that's on your mind? What?
Hopefully, yeah. I'd like to write a novel next, but... Yeah, right.
Like something that's just something in your mind, like you have characters and that you're going to put out there.
Yep.
I love it.
But that is much harder. I think writing fiction is a lot harder than writing non.
What happened?
Yeah, because you already know, you know, you're just writing down what happened, what you saw. You know all the characters. You know their backstory because they're real people. And with fiction, that all has to be created out of thin air. You know?
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Let's read the back of your book here. I'm going to read this. At just 18 years old, Milo Lugosi joined the Marine Corps a decade after the war began and found himself surrounded by people not unlike those he'd left behind at home. Aimless youth searching for stability, community, and economic security. Deployed to Afghanistan as a combat cameraman, an active duty videographer and photographer, Lugosi produced slick images of glory and heroism for public consumption. But his government-approved footage concealed a grim reality. Here, Lugosi pulls back the curtain and illustrates the grisly truth of the longest war in American history. As these young men and women were deployed in an unfamiliar country half a world away, history's graveyard of empires, they carried the scars of the fractured homeland that sent them. Lugosi shows us Marines straddling the edge of chaos. We see forces desensitized to gore and suffering by the darkest reaches of the internet, unsure of their place in an unraveling world and set further adrift by the uncertain mission to which they had been assigned abroad. Whistles from the Graveyard shows the parts of the Afghanistan war we were never meant to see. Afghan locals and American infantry drawn together by their fears of the ghostly, ever-present terror of the Taliban. Moments of dark resignation and as the devastating toll of years in wars, crossfire reveals itself between bouts of adrenaline-laced violence and nights of reckless, drug-fueled abandon to dull the pain. Yeah, why not? In full vivid color, Miles Lugosi shows us an oft-overlooked generation of young Americans we cast out into the desert, steeped in nihilism, and shipped back home with firsthand training in extremism, misanthropy, and insurrection. That's on the back of the book. I just wanted to read that for you so you get an idea of what's in this book, what's going on with Miles. So, Miles, you know, I like to talk about snowboarding. I like to talk about thrills before pills and getting out and doing something with yourself mentally. You know, we do talk about the VA and going there and then here's a prescription, go take this pill and all that kind of stuff. How does someone like you, who's seen through lenses, seen things firsthand that didn't, no one really sees, how are you coping with all of that? Is it snowboarding, riding? Is that what you're doing?
Well, I mean, for a long time it was just drinking. You know, I'm trying to cut back on that. But, I'll tell you, like, I didn't really feel it as much when I first got out. But the thing is, it comes back. Like, I was just talking to a buddy of mine, and he never, you know, he was getting disability for PTSD, and he actually even, you know, canceled it as if he said, no, I don't, you know, I don't have PTSD. Stop giving me a monthly check, you know, for that. And then just recently, he started having panic attacks, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it goes away and it comes, but it's always kind of there, you know, it comes and goes. I think especially during COVID when everyone was locked down, that's when it was the hardest for me, was because you're just trapped with your own thoughts and all that, you know.
But yeah, and not go out and talk to anybody. You're kind of like
right,
only yeah. that certain amount. Yeah, it's just you and your headspace.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, somewhere deep in your mind.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone was drinking during the day. You remember, like, just day drinking, doing drugs. You know, there were a lot of ODs during COVID. Yeah, just being trapped with nothing to do, nowhere to go. On top of that, then the pull out from Afghanistan, I think that was very hard for a lot of veterans, you know, myself included.
Yeah, to see what they were sent over for, to fight for, to just be abysmally just ended, like, you know, just cut open a pool, above ground pool, and let the water just out. That's kind of how the...
Well, they knew... Not a single fucking person I know who was in Afghanistan was actually in the shit, like in the fucking war. Now, I'm not talking about like being on Bagram Air Base where they have like a TGI Fridays and a Starbucks and shit. I'm talking about living like in the actual war. No one was surprised. No one was surprised by what happened. I mean, the quickness of it was surprised. It was surprised me how quickly the Afghan army just surrendered.
Melted. Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to understand they had been fighting the Taliban. So around 2014, 2015, don't quote me on that, but I think that's when we stopped actively like patrolling with the Afghan army. You know, kicking in doors with them and actually like, you know, patrolling and getting, taking fire and whatnot. Once we stopped doing that, their troops reached Vietnam casualty rates. I mean, they were getting totally massacred by the Taliban because they didn't have us with them. They didn't have our air support. And so they were tired, man. They were fucking tired by the time Biden, pulled us out. And so I think they were just like, what's the point? You know,
well, the accord was signed by Donald Trump in December.
Yeah.
That's what was signed to, and he also invited the Taliban to Camp David.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's bring that up in perspective of what was left for the guy that came in to take over, because Biden wasn't, he was a civilian when all of that happened. Right. And so, it was just put in his lap to deal with, and he had to. But I think what he said also is what you said also, is it just happened so quickly. No one stood up to fight for their country.
They don't have a country. There's no country.
They've been fighting for so long since 79, the invasion of Russia, the Ottoman Empire. I mean, Petra, you know, all the way back to dawn of time. This is, we're talking, you know, every stone over there has DNA on it.
Yeah, man. It's a crazy place. And it's not, it's like, our whole thing was like trying to convince them that, trying to give them a national identity or something. Like you're Afghan and have some pride, right. Pride in your country. And they're like, but I identify with this tribe. Like I don't identify as an Afghan. You know, a lot of those civilians that are living out there in the rural parts where the war was happening were like, who the fuck are you guys? Like what's an Afghan to them, you know? They're just living.
This is Afghanistan? They're like, wait, what? We call this, you know.
Yeah, they just identify as their tribe, you know? And it was just insane. It was totally fucking insane to think that we could, I don't know, make it work.
Change it?
Yeah. It was just so stupid.
Change the scenery?
And they knew.
The mountains.
Those motherfuckers, McChrystal and what's his name? Petraeus.
Mm-hmm.
All those motherfuckers knew it wasn't working. And it wasn't going to work. And they just kept perpetuating it for reasons that I think we all know, you know, a lot of it had to do with money, you know,
economy. Yep. Our number one exports are military as America.
Yeah.
We export the military worldwide.
Hey, global, you know, international.
It's our number one thing. And then back home, the war machine kicks up like, oh, yeah, here we go. Mm-hmm. The wheels are spinning. Mm-hmm. Here comes the DOD contracts. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, why are we bidding on the lowest dollar for the most night vision, best night vision? Wait, what? Just get the good night vision.
$3 trillion. $3 trillion was spent on Afghanistan, and we still don't have health care back at home. And you can't get a minimum wage. You can't get a minimum wage job. You know, like.
But we have health care, but we're paying for it. Like,
it's insane.
Like,
man.
But everybody has to pay for it. But we're like, I completely the war machine. Like you said, you know, here we are as taxpayers. Paying our taxes because we have to, but they go to some Patriot missile that gets its wires ripped out for $40,000. And now that money that I wanted it to work is just a ripped out Patriot missile wire. It's like, please don't put my taxpayers' dollars into a Patriot missile. Please put it into body armor.
Yeah, man. I mean, we patrolled with gear like and weapons of destruction at our disposal that totaled more in like the average college student's debt. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's in debt. Everyone's enslaved to the system back home. Meanwhile, we're wasting trillions of dollars abroad.
Talk about Bin Laden's already dead. Okay,
he died. So
Bin Laden's
he died.
He already got shot. Yeah,
he died while we were out there, and they called a formation in the middle of the night, and they said, "Yeah, we got Bin Laden." And so everyone's like, does that mean we can go home? Like,
right.
The war over? And no, it was another 10 years.
Another 10 years with a free piece of paper that said you have carte blanche to do whatever you need in the name of terrorism.
Yeah, and when you say the global war on terrorism, what does that mean? What does that mean? That means we can go anywhere we want.
Anywhere.
We can go anywhere we want that we call a terrorist place. So basically, we opened up the whole Middle East, mostly the Middle East and Asia, right? To basically just do whatever we want. I mean, imagine if a country flew a drone into like Manhattan and just shot a fucking.
I'm already there.
And just shot like a low level drug dealer, right?
I'm with you.
No trial, nothing, just straight. You know, execution, right?
Right.
That's what we've been doing for the past 20 years is just literally killing usually the wrong people. Let's be honest, because military intelligence is an oxymoron. It doesn't, no one knows what the fuck they're doing. And you're killing these low level guys with no trial, you know, no nothing, just. Oh, he's a bad guy. Yeah, done. He's dead. And then the kids come running over and they kill them too. And it's like, what have we created? What kind of like system apparatus have we created that allows us to just go into other people's backyard and assassinate people from the sky? Like freaking.
Well, it's kind of playing out right now where, unfortunately, Hamas, threw rockets in a volley at Israel recently. Israel has retaliated, saying that this is now their 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
They have retaliated, saying that they have every right to go into Gaza and just level it and whatever they need to do to now go carte blanche, right? And so now Israel's like coiling up to do some type of GWOT, Global War on Terror, front, because they saw us do that when we were assaulted in New York City, and then we turned into the global war on terror mechanism machine.
Yep.
Just to go after him, right?
It's uncanny. It's uncanny how similar the fear mongering is that the news is doing. You know, back like they did after 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I see things, I'm just watching it. And I talk to a lot of folks, I've got a friend in Gaza right now on the ground, and he's just like, rad, can you get me someone at Marine DOD so I can talk to him about this MEU unit that's off the coast? He's like this, that, and the other. And he's right there, he's taking photos of the Israeli tanks. I want to call them like a Merca, but it's something different. But nonetheless, dude,
yeah,
they're coiling up over there for something. And
the actors who perpetrated the war that threw those rockets mm-hmm. are not the children that are exactly. throwing slingshots.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm sorry. Kids with a rock in a slingshot are not the kids with the rockets.
No. No. And you can't, like we said, you know, you can't, for one terrorist group to miss a terrorist act, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just then invade the whole country because it's like, because of 100 guys did something like what
right.
we did in Afghanistan, like Al Qaeda, I think was maybe 1,000 deep in the cave, and you know the cave.
Right?
Or
why do we even go into Iraq?
Don't get me started on that. Yeah,
because
yeah.
Saddam paid a family $25,000 for their suicide bomber, and as soon as he did that, they said, "Oh, he just became a terrorist. Go."
Yep.
And Turkey's like, we're not going to let you invade from the north. And then they made him move all of everything, go all the way around Iraq. It was like, we know you're coming. This whole thing was because.
And, you know, like when we talk about terrorism, you also got to think when you're the weaker force, the resistant, and you're being oppressed by a giant machine of war that can mm-hmm. just. That's constantly bullying, constantly oppressing you. Sometimes, and this was the case with the Viet Cong and Algerians and France, and you know, terrorism is sometimes the only way to resist, to fight back, because you can't, mm-hmm. you know, Hamas can't just like overrun the Israeli military, right? So they right. have to. I'm not advocating for terrorism. I'm just saying when we think about it, it's sometimes the only option that they have, right, is to commit acts of terror because they don't have any other resources.
They don't have the same infrastructure. They're working on the sidelines. They're doing things that are like these. They're being Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan, where he creates a sticky bomb out of a sock to try to blow up a tank.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's his last. It's all he has. He's like, yeah. And then one of the guys blows up trying to blow up the tank.
Yeah.
It's like. You know, they have to do these crazy things. And I'm not saying one way or the other. I think war is bad. I understand to train for war and be ready to handle it if it happens. But I asked my friend the other day, I said, are you ready for a hypersonic missile to blow up the Quickie Mart across the street while we're getting an oil change? Like, that was a real conversation I said to him, because he's like this, that, and the other with Ukraine. And they know I do these shows, and so they want to get into my brain. And I'm like, are you ready to go pick up your neighbor's daughter who's blown into your yard because they just blew up your house out of what? Nowhere? All of a sudden, shaboom, shaboom, shaboom. Then what?
Then what? Then you see the true cost. Then you see the true cost.
Are you not an insurgent now to them? Because now you live here and you're being invaded. What does that make me?
Yeah.
Right? If I'm moving house to house because I know my neighborhood, you damn right.
Yeah.
I'm an insurgent now. Oh, I live here, dude. This is my house. You call me an insurgent because you attacked me.
Right.
You exactly. came into me.
Yeah.
If I go to you, I'm an invader.
Right. Right. If we kill people from the sky, we're not terrorists. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not, hey, you know, the world needs to just realize that's the way it is. Like, we all bleed the same blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all come from aliens.
What do you think? What do you think about this Dave Grush guy? You hear about him?
No, maybe.
David Grush. He went to Congress and said that we have possession of alien spacecraft.
Oh right.
So this guy, this knucklehead, this chuckle butt, he's in like the high echelons, right, of the intelligence apparatus, and it gives you such a perfect picture of how incompetent these guys are. I don't know what you believe about aliens, but I can tell you from my experience with the intelligence community is they're not very intelligent, and they're very gullible, and they like hoarding secrets, or like knowing. They kind of share. They're like gossiping about what they know that someone else doesn't know, and yeah, it's just funny, man. That came out, like somebody convinced him that there was, you know, the government had alien spacecraft, and he bought it so hard without any of it. You never saw any of it. just someone told him, and he was like, I'm going to Congress, and I'm
going to say, yeah, you know, it's like I live by Hill Air Force Base, and I always see the F-35s flying over, and I'll take a photo for Instagram, a story, and I always add an alien spacecraft chasing it. Okay. I do. It's just who I am, right? Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, do you not get it? Like the technology, like we go from flying popsicle sticks at Kitty Hawk in 1920s, mm-hmm, whatnot, mm-hmm, to the SR-71 in the atmosphere in 1940s.
Yeah.
So in 20 some years, you're going to tell me that we go from popsicle sticks to nuclear energy of sorts?
Well, when was the popsicle stick? Wasn't that the 1800s?
No, Kitty Hawk was 19... Let me see here. Let's get people to correct us on the comments. I say it was like before Christ. Prove me wrong. I think Kitty Hawk was... Let me look real quick.
I don't
let me
know go what to Kitty my, Hawk is.
Kitty Hawk is where the Wright brothers...
Oh, right. Took flight. Yeah.
Yeah, with the first aircraft that actually flew for like 100 yards, and it was made out of popsicle sticks.
I thought that was like 1890 or something.
No, it was 1900s. Yeah. Well, I'll find it real quick here. Kitty Hawk. This might just get you a snowboard pass if I'm wrong. Okay,
let's see here.
Kitty Hawk. They're probably going to tell me USS Kitty Hawk. Hello, Kitty Dolls. When was... Wright brothers, because first flight, let's go with that. 1903.
Okay.
December 17th. Okay. Wilbur and Orville Wright spent 4 years of research and development to create the first successful powered airplane, the 1903 Wright Flyer. It flew at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina on December 17th, 1903, with the Orville at the controls. So the first flight flew 12 seconds.
Nice. Nailed
it. So let's go from that. Let's go from that to the SR-71 in the 40s. Okay, so let's talk 40 years of technology now has increased, mm-hmm, from flying a paper airplane to,
yep,
aliens, bro. The F-16's been around since 1970s.
Yeah,
and it's still in service today, but now we got the 35. And when I was in the Air Force, it was the YF-22, which was still a test aircraft, but now the F-22 Raptor has been surpassed by the 35. So, I mean...
You got to wonder, I think, whether the government has an incentive, mm-hmm, in people believing that they possess alien technology. Because if the government, what I call aliens, like a super intelligent being, right, that could travel here, I call aliens basically like gods for atheists, right? Atheists don't believe in the old man with the beard in the sky, right? No, they believe in a super intelligent life form that can travel here and do whatever they want to us and maybe invade our consciousness and all this shit, right? And if the government is in possession of that kind of technology, by de facto, the government kind of becomes a form of God itself. So I think the government has an incentive in us believing that they have alien shit.
That they have,
but they don't. I don't believe they do personally. But I think they do have an incentive. And actually, in the 80s, in the late 70s and the 80s, they infiltrated the UFO community and started spreading misinformation, saying, because these guys were these like Bob Lazar type guys were filming outside the bases, and they were just filming like top secret technology. It wasn't alien shit. It was like drone. Like
it is a UFO because unidentified flying object because you don't know what it is.
Right.
And it's not you don't know its name, so it does fall into that classification. But is it the lensed eyeball style aliens that come down and just can save humanity or destroy it? Is it Prometheus?
Right. Exactly.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Great.
I love it.
I know. Everyone hates it, but I love that film.
So I love that movie. I find that it's like, you know.
I love when a dude just rips his head off the creator. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, he's like, I think I can talk to him.
I'm
like, bro.
Don't do it.
Whoa, David.
No, David. No.
But it just goes to tell me, it just shows that they're mammals because aliens are mammals. You know that. Mm-hmm. You realize because she is the mother of aliens. She mothered it and he gave it to her and it came out of her and it's still alive. And then aliens comes from Prometheus. Oh man. Mm-hmm. Now, are those the aliens people think about, you know?
If I is honestly,
that what Tom DeLonge is thinking about in Blink 182? You know, he's so adamant that aliens are real. You know, I got to get Tom a shout out in here. He just played a short show last night in Vegas.
Why is he spearheading the?
Why is it's Tom DeLonge?
Why is Blink 182 like spearheading this whole movement? It's crazy. You know, to me, it would seem a super intelligent life form wouldn't have to physically travel here. They could just send particles that would be able to, we wouldn't be able to see it, but they could be watching us, right? In sure. the air. They would have some form like a crystal ball. Like, why would they need to come all the way over here? And then on top of that, crash. Like, they make it, you know, they make it billions of light years, right? Billions of light years.
To crash on Earth.
And then, oh, shit, yeah. I got stuck in the second gear. And it just doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
Stop. I want to like Men in Black. Stop. I want to
believe.
Vincent, I want to know he needs sugar.
Sugar, water.
And he crashed his plane here again, Jay. Oh, man.
Sugar, water.
That's around Orion. Okay. Well, listen. Miles Lagosi.
My man, all right.
Bro, I've had you on here for an hour, I really have appreciated it, and I'm sure my one listener, so thank you for talking to me and them. Just one, that's all I ever think of, is just the person listening, so thank you to you, and thank you to buying all my merch, to that one listener.
There's really only one listener?
Yeah, just one. Just all right. And if not,
Hey, bud.
Hi, thank you. Really, you know, that's the old radio thought, you know, Miles, is that back in the day when you had no digital radio, you stayed on the static dial because it took forever to find it. And that's why advertising worked so well, is because they'd always stay on that station, always hear the same ad over and over again. Now today you have this dial that can just push into 50 different stations. So what I'm getting at is you always want to just talk to the listeners if it's that one person that just has you tuned in.
Well, I hope more people listen to it.
Oh, yeah, you need to be a New York Times bestselling author, bro. We got to help you get there. That one person might just buy all your books, okay? Yeah. And you never know if Miles is at the airport and he's signing a book. You never know if it's there, so go check it out.
We're telling people to buy 10 copies each and then sell them to your friends to make a profit. And,
done. Branch that out, dude. And here in Utah, we love a good old, how can I sell to my neighbor? So get going on that door-to-door.
All right,
but
man.
Again, Miles, you've been great. I just want to say thank you for your service to the country. You know, you chose to join. You weren't forced, so thanks for that. Thanks for talking about the VA. Thanks for talking about yourself as a young man growing up. And no one ever pays me to say go join the military. But if you're on the fence and you're out there and you're thinking about it and you're on a scale of 1 to 10 of possibly joining, just see what happens. Go talk to them. He says no. I'm just saying you never know until you try. And with that, this is Rad saying on behalf of Miles, peace.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Miles. All right, cheers.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.